This is URN Sport.
Good afternoon and welcome to a special edition of the Outside the Box podcast, where we're tackling another kind of social, political issue in football. And today we're going to be talking about homophobia in football and the relationship between football and the LGBTQ community. Now I'm joined by Jay, who is a very active member in Stonewall. He's both the press manager and the first team captain of the Stonewall Football Club, which is a very pioneering football team made up of exclusively LGBTQ members and a team that provides a safe space for people who are part of the LGBTQ community. So Jay, thank you very much for coming on the show. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Cheers, Alex. Thanks for having me. Not too bad. Obviously surviving under the conditions and circumstances, but yeah, it's great to be on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a weird couple of months, hasn't it? So let's get started, and I want to firstly, for the first part of the podcast, I'd like to kind of talk about your role within Stonewall and what the football club does within the LGBTQ community. And secondly, I kind of want to talk about broader issues with sexuality in football, football players coming out, and what kind of footballing governing bodies, what more they can do to kind of rectify homophobia in football. So, firstly, I wanted to ask you, how did you get involved with Stonewall FC? And can you tell us a little bit about the club and its recent history?
Yeah, so I got involved in the club about three, four years ago now, actually. I actually found out about the club after the university. And I actually got involved through another LGBT-friendly inclusive club called Millwall Romans, or they were London Romans at the time. And I found out about that club whilst I was at university studying sports development, and I did my dissertation on homophobia in specifically in grassroots football and what the experiences of gay and bi men were at that grassroots level. And I remember at the time being really confused about where I find LGBT players or gay and bi players, but because I thought I was almost the only one, and I didn't have any friends who were openly gay or bi, and I didn't know about sort of all these LGBT inclusive clubs that actually existed. So I remember I found out about the London Unity League, which is one of the LGBT inclusive team leagues that the team operates in. And I just carpet bombed every team. And then one of the teams, the Millwall Romans or London Romans at the time, got in touch. And I ended up interviewing a few of their players, getting to know them. And then after my degree, I ended up playing for them for a year. And I actually scored, I think it was like 8 goals against the Stonewall team at the time, and then one of the first team managers, Eric, he came over and asked if I wanted to play for Stonewall FC at a high level on a Saturday afternoon. I sort of fell in love with the history of the club and kind of what they represent of sort of inclusivity, but also kind of trying to play at the highest level and representing the whole broader LGBT community.
Out of interest, kind of, what position do you play, and are you quite a versatile player? What kind of role do you have in the team? Obviously, you're the club captain as well, but tactically, where do you stand?
Yeah, so it's funny. I always say, I grew up playing fullback, so I could probably play like a really, really high level at fullback. When I was younger, I'd always play fullback, and because I was quite quick, and I could also get forward. The older that I got, the more teams sort of push me either out wide or up front. So at the moment I play up front, but I can also play centre mid. I've played a few games centre mid this year. But my actual favourite position is centre half. But I guess I'm only sort of 5'10", but I do prefer playing centre half. But I guess most of the time I'm either up front or centre mid.
So You're in the Middlesex County League. Can you tell us a bit about the kind of teams you face? And also last season, I hear, like many other kind of lower leagues in football, from almost League One downwards, to be honest, the season was abandoned. And so can you tell us about the kind of teams you face? And also, has it been difficult over the last few months with kind of the implications and the consequences of COVID-19? How has that impacted the team?
Yeah, it's been really tricky, to be honest. I think as a club, we've obviously had our ambitions, and our ambitions, particularly in the first team, is always to kind of try and play at the highest level possible. And at the moment, we obviously play in the Middlesex County Prem Division, which is a really, really great standard for us. And a lot of the teams that we come up against are, again, like great sides with great facilities and backroom staff and quality players. So the standard of the league is really, really good. But I think most importantly as well, I think because we've been operating the Middlesex County League for quite some time, we've built up some rivalries and some friendships and with a lot of the teams that we kind of play up against as well. So they kind of know our ethos as a club. Mm. And it kind of makes it a lot better often for some clubs where sort of the lower down you get in the division, who particularly newer clubs or clubs that kind of aren't necessarily more well acquainted with our ethos, it's kind of when we tend to get a bit more aggro than we do now. But yeah, in the league we play at the moment, it's really, really high standard, really enjoyable playing at. In some weeks we're playing on really, really nice grounds. We've got a particularly great ground ourselves, so it's really, really positive. And like I say, there are one or two other clubs in our league to actually share our ethos. So Clapton Community Football Club as well, who are kind of, they brand themselves as sort of an anti-fascist community club, and they're really, we've got a bit of a rivalry. They were frenemies, I guess, but yeah, we've got a bit of a friendly rivalry with them, and again, they're a great club that are run by the community, and we have a lot of like really, really passionate and competitive games against them again, because we have sort of similar outlook on sort of inclusion in football more broadly.
Yeah, you bring up a very good point there about kind of clubs standing for certain ethoses. Obviously, Stonewall FC is a very good example of that, and the club you just mentioned. And I wanted to bring in kind of other clubs that stand for other issues. And an example that comes to mind is a club we've talked quite a lot about on the podcast before, Forest Green Rovers, who, of course, stand for kind of being the most eco-friendly club in the world, effectively, with their diets, with their stadium, the way they operate. How important is it that football clubs like Stonewall FC and like Forest Green Rovers and like other clubs that stand for prejudices and discrimination and homophobia, how important is it that these clubs exist?
Yeah, it's incredibly important, right? I think, of course, funny you mentioned Forest Green. I actually went to university in Gloucestershire. So
oh, okay.
That whole sort of area I'm very much well acquainted with. And I think ultimately what football clubs are, no matter what level you get to, football clubs tend to be a representation of their communities, right? And again, like, I think the clubs that operate the best and the clubs that kind of are most successful, not just on the pitch but off the pitch, most importantly, are the ones that kind of uphold that connection to the community and really kind of really define what values and ethos is. Kind of they want to take back into that community. So for us as an LGBT inclusive club, it's really important for us to kind of really maintain that connection to the LGBT community. So whether our first team are playing in the Premier Division, whether we're playing in Conference South, or whether we're still playing in Middlesex County Prem, it's really important for us to have our third team that still plays LGBT inclusive football on a Sunday afternoon in the London Unity League. Because again, that's exactly what we were set up to do. We were founded as a club to create a safe space for anybody who wanted to play football, no matter what your sexual orientation or your gender identity. And we're lucky enough to have those two different spaces where we're able to facilitate that. So the clubs that do really, really well, like I mentioned, are the ones that really identify what issues and what are important to their communities, and really try and encompass that and embed that into kind of how they run their club on a weekly basis, whether that's match days or training.
What would your message be to young footballers, whether that's young professional footballers, young semi-professional footballers, or young amateur footballers, who are struggling with, you know, their sexual identity, their gender identity, people who perhaps are on the LGBTQ spectrum but haven't come out formally yet? What would be your advice to those players?
I think my advice would just be to, I guess, take your time. I think find a space that is inclusive and that empowers you to be able to maximise who you are, not just as a player, but as a human being. And that's a place that celebrates you both on the pitch and off the pitch as a human. And that's when you'll be able to kind of really be able to grow into yourself and maximise your potential both on the pitch and off the pitch. Because football isn't just about results on the pitch. I think whatever happens off the pitch also influences what happens at a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday afternoon. And coaches these days are increasingly identifying that. So again, I think for me, it's just go at your own pace. There's a lot of pressure put on players anyway, let alone putting additional pressure on players choosing to come out or encouraging players to come out when they're not ready. Coming out is a very personal journey. So what I would recommend is that don't come out if you're not ready to. Just kind of ensure that you're in a space that celebrates you and is looking out for your best interests both on the pitch and off the pitch. Because when you come out, that will happen organically. That will happen naturally when anybody's ready to. But yeah, you've just got to surround yourself with positive people who celebrate you as an individual and as a player.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, and it shows how important Stonewall FC is, and Stonewall is as an organisation for creating a safe space for LGBTQ people to do something that they love, and you know, everyone in theory can unite over football, so it is a really, really great cause. And I want to talk about it a little bit more in the broader context of the overall issue, which is, you know, it's an issue that's been prevalent throughout football's history fundamentally, and that is the problem of homophobia and the relationship between homophobia and football, and why it still appears to be a persistent problem even in the modern game, when a lot of attitudes have changed, where, you know, there's been a lot more kind of internationally progressive stances on the LGBTQ community. I mean, gay marriage being legalized in a lot of countries being an example of that. The next couple of questions are a little bit personal. So honestly, if you wouldn't like to answer them, feel free. You're not under any kind of obligation to answer them. But have you ever been the victim of any homophobia? And if there is an experience, would you potentially be willing to talk about it? Honestly, no worries if you're not comfortable. But yeah, have you ever been the victim of homophobia?
So again, I think I've been incredibly lucky, and I always obviously incredibly grateful, but I always kind of feel like it's important for me to sort of check my own privilege in that sense, because growing up, I played for mainstream teams. I guess I've always had the privilege of sort of my gender expression is kind of more conformative. I've always had the privilege of being able to pass in certain situations, and particularly for the clubs that I've played for. I guess if you're football ultimately is a meritocracy, so if you're good, I guess people are in a lot of cases willing to kind of look the other way or kind of be more likely to kind of give you a bit of a pass because you're one of the better players. And I've been lucky where I've always been a fairly decent player on any team that I've played for, and I've always managed to get support because of that. But I guess sort of outside of playing for mainstream teams, and when I've sort of joined Stonewall FC, I've experienced things which haven't necessarily directly been directed at me on a football pitch, but certainly to one of my teammates. And yeah, it's a horrible experience. And when I joined Stonewall FC, I would say that's the first time I've ever experienced homophobia directed at anybody close to me, and witnessed it firsthand. So again, I think it just points to the fact that we've come a long way, but these instances still do happen. And again, I think there's, particularly with social media, the only things that I've experienced that have happened directly to me are when I've potentially done something media related with the club, and it's been on social media or it's been picked up by a mainstream platform, and when you see the comments below, and again, I think that's just a stark reminder that even though we've made loads of progress, there's still a long way to go. But yeah, I think we could still sort of celebrate and be happy in the fact that, yeah, these spaces exist, and we are being able to kind of share our story of the club. For every person that is negative, for every person that is homophobic, there's also another, say, 10 people who are really supportive and really encouraging as well. So it's really important to note.
Yeah, absolutely. There's certainly been elements of progress, and you've hit the nail on the head perfectly there. The fact that progress has been made, but homophobia in football does remain an issue. And you bring up a very good point, a very big problem, or a problem that's kind of emerged more recently in the form of social media. It seems recently like players of just various players have been victims of horrendous social media abuse, whether that's kind of racist, whether it's another form of discrimination, whether it's homophobia. And, you know, you just have to go on to Facebook and look at a post about rainbow laces, and as you said, you can read some of the comments, and they're vile, they're genuinely really horrible things, and it makes you think, like, how can people say that? And it genuinely baffled me how people can be so cruel. So it's definitely still it's definitely still an issue. And I do want to kind of bring up the Rainbow Laces campaign a little bit more. Obviously, that's probably recently been the most prominent Premier League based anti-homophobia campaign. Would you say they've done enough? Would you say it's been an effective campaign so far? Or would you say there could be more that could be done?
No, look, I think there absolutely could be a lot more that could be done. We could all say that. I think it's a collective responsibility. But I think you've just got to kind of point to that campaign and see the power and the impact that it's had, not just for LGBT people, but for allies, and kind of opening up that conversation and giving people a platform to show their visible support for LGBT people. And that's huge. That's absolutely massive. And I would absolutely say, particularly over the last 4 to 5 years, there's been a step change and a key change on how important people feel that this issue is. And I think that's thankfully down to the campaigns like the Rainbow Laces campaign and the support that it's had from all of football and all other sports as well. And I think that could only be a positive thing. And like I said, not just in terms of for LGBT people, because I think LGBT people seeing this level of support and people that you see it from is absolutely, it can be life changing, right? It's so inspiring. So again, like, I think it that can't be understated, but the power that it has to kind of bring allies on board as well, who again can support in that kind of culture change and create those inclusive environments that we're talking about, that's the impact that they could really, really have. And yes, I can only see it as an incredibly positive thing and very, very much instrumental in kind of how much better the discourse around this particular issue has become.
Yeah, I think the Rainbow Laces has been a fantastic statement so far. I think the fact that it's kind of a visual statement, I think any kind of progressive visual statement in a Premier League game will always kind of attract attention. And I think, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think the Rainbow Laces campaign has been extremely effective. And I think it's very healthy that it's been, you know, completely backed by the Premier League. Like, in theory, the whole active football world is behind it to some degree. And it's literally just kind of eradicating the small minority of people that are homophobes. And as you said, like, it is more of a majority now, but there still needs to be a little bit more work to be done. And I want to talk a little bit about what you think should happen to people who are found guilty of homophobic abuse, whether that's at a stadium when we finally get back into the stadiums, or whether that's over social media. I read quite a horrifying statistic that 72% of football fans have heard homophobic abuse, which is an astronomically high number, considering like a lot of people were surveyed. What punishment do you think needs to be in place for the people responsible for this?
I think we could, I think sort of fine, depending on the severity of the incident. Absolutely great, whether it's banned, whether it's fine. But I think most importantly, I think we could talk about fines and banning, but I think what's really important is a good restorative justice. There's a bit of education. I think ultimately, if a fan is saying something homophobic inside a football ground, the likelihood is that they'll probably say something homophobic outside the ground too. So what we don't want to do is kind of absolve responsibility. What we want to do is ensure that football is creating a space where we're able to educate people so that they can behave themselves and understand what language is harmful and hurtful within the game. And then take that learning back out into society. Because, these people go back out into society. So what we don't want is to kind of have these people creating trauma both within the game and outside the game. So I think education is so much more important than giving someone a fine or giving someone a ban. Because ultimately, if you fine someone, it doesn't necessarily change their hearts or their minds. It just kind of, in a lot of cases, may potentially build up even more resentment. And what we want to do is educate people about the impact of their words, and kind of educate them as to kind of what language is harmful and how to act and respond in more positive and more supportive ways as opposed to discrimination.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between footballers coming out and the Premier League. And historically, it has been rare that there's been kind of gay footballers in the Premier League or openly gay footballers in the Premier League. And typically, when footballers who have played in the Premier League have come out, such as Thomas Hitzlsperger, they've waited until after retirement to reveal it. Of course, there are other examples as well. There's obviously the tragic story of Justin Fashanu, who became kind of the most high profile footballer to come out at the time back in 1990. And there was also Robbie Rogers, who had a brief spell in the Championship with Leeds United before basically spending the most of his career in the MLS and for the United States national team. What do you think needs to be done for Premier League footballers to have a safe space to come out? And how big a role do you think the media plays in potentially making it a little bit more of a toxic environment? And the reason why I mention the media is, that there's constantly stories about finding the gay footballer and anonymous kind of allegations of a footballer being homosexual, which of course isn't creating a safe environment for them to come out. So what are your thoughts on that? And what do you think can be improved for a player to ultimately come out in the Premier League?
I think it's an interesting one because I think sometimes we use that as a bit of a yardstick, right? We kind of point to the silver bullet of if a gay Premier League player was to come out today. And again, I don't think that would be the case for a number of the reasons that you kind of mentioned. I think particularly the media, I think there is particularly this love affair of the gay Premier League footballer. And I think it's quite a reductive and harmful conversation because it never talks about whether a player might be bi. It never talks about sort of the number of openly gay or lesbian players that exist, gay, lesbian, or bi players that exist within the women's game. And I think it's very, very reductive. So I think ultimately, players just want to be players, and they just want to play football at the end of the day. And whether they're LGBT or not, I guess for them the most important part of their life, they're trained every day to be an athlete, to be a footballer. But they don't want to be known as the gay footballer or the bi footballer. They just want to play football. So it's a very personal journey, and I think we should. particularly in the media, I think the more we can sort of veer away from that conversation of who's when we're going to get an out player, outgate professional player in the Premier League, the more helpful that would it would allow kind of the discourse to progress, because it's just very reductive. And if it was me as a player in those locker rooms, I don't want my identity to be speculated about. I just want to kind of explore that in my own time and my own space. And that's what we should afford people, ultimately. And again, support that we should provide to clubs is of a similar vein. Just work on the environment that you're creating for players. We all know how to support players. We all know how to support people when they're going through a number of different challenges. And with someone's LGBT, it's no different. What it looks like to be a good teammate is exactly what it looks like to be supportive to individuals. So it's just about creating those environments where players can thrive no matter what elements of their identity they have on show or they don't have on show. And that's about celebrating about a number of different things. But yeah, the media has a role to play, particularly in the narrative that kind of sometimes gets focused on specifically around that gay Premier League footballer, and I don't think that's particularly helpful.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I think, you know, some parts of the media have been guilty of almost creating a culture of outing a player, which, as you said, as you explained, it is wrong on so many levels. As coming out is a very personal, very delicate, very much an individual journey, and I think, you know, there's certainly culpability within the media, and the focus has to be on creating the safe space rather than outing the player. So would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the only thing we can control as a community, as anybody who's supportive or LGBT inclusion, anything we can control is the environment. Whether that's the stands, whether that's at the training grounds, whether that's on a match day, or whether that's on social media, the only thing we control is the environment that these players come in contact with. So as long as we're really, really celebrative of these identities, and we're ensuring that anybody who might be thinking about coming out knows that there's that olive branch there of support, and knows that they will be supported if they do come out, and then that's the only thing we can do. And the number of ways you can do that, but whether someone chooses to make that step or not, it shouldn't really be so much of a focus of conversation for me.
I you brought up an interesting point earlier as well about how there are more openly gay and openly bisexual women in women's football. And you know, I can think of a few examples off the top of my head. Why do you think it's easier to come out and it's a safer space in the women's game? And what lessons can kind of the top end of the men's game take from, you know, the Women's Super League, the England women's national team, where women have come out as gay? What lessons can they take to kind of create a safer space in the Premier League and in the higher levels of British football and European football?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one too, because I think sometimes we look to the women's game and because there's all that visibility, all those role models, we think that it's completely solved, but there are some challenges in that space also. I'm obviously not most qualified to talk about it, but stereotyping happens at that level as well, and homophobia also exists at that level as well. So it's not entirely solved, but absolutely, I think you're completely right that there are so much more visible role models that exist within the women's game, and we should celebrate those more. And I think the more we celebrate them, the more we can kind of shift the narrative around ensuring that people understand that LGBT identities exist at this professional level already, and that they're no different, and that we've always existed. And the more that becomes normalised, the more easier it will be to kind of really, really harness progress. But absolutely, I think there are so much lessons that the men's game can learn from the women's game. But I think that they obviously both have different challenges. I think you could add the kind of exposure, you could add the kind of pressures of sponsorship, the pressures of media attention and focus. It's multifaceted, but absolutely there are correlations, and the more we could focus on the positives of the correlations and kind of really use that to harness progress in the game as a whole, the better we did kind of really maximise the momentum in that particular aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are still, as you said, lessons to be learned, but, you know, we should take positivity from the progress that has been made. And I wanted to talk about a study that I read into in preparation for this podcast, and effectively research that was undertaken by the National Union of Students during 2012. It effectively surveyed the opinions of 845 LGBT students, and it found that 46.8% of respondents experience sports culture as alienating or unwelcoming. So this is probably a question that's slightly broader than just football, because obviously sport culture can refer to any sport. But do you think that it almost has to be an effort of all sports to kind of come together to battle homophobia? And how could that form of reform take place?
Yeah, I think those stats don't surprise me at all, and I think there's another kind of negative of that sort of narrative around a gay professional footballer in the Premier League is it kind of really, it almost gives other sports a bit of a pass, because a lot of focus sort of rightfully or wrongfully goes towards football, but when actually what we do know about sort of anti-LGBT sentiment or experiences from LGBT people is that this is a sports-wide issue. It happens in every sport. It's predominantly more prevalent in team sport, but absolutely this is a whole sports issue, and any LGBT person will kind of talk to you about their experiences of not just football, but potentially cricket or rugby or any of the other sports that potentially might feel that they've got it solved because they've had someone come out in the twilight of their career. And again, I think the more we can kind of shift the narrative around that and tackle it as a collective sport focus, the better it will be. Because, yeah, football does kind of get a bad rap, and I think there actually is a lot of positive things that football is doing compared to other sports.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think, you know, homophobia is an issue that has to be solved in every sport. There's probably not a sport out there where there's absolutely no homophobia. And that leads me to my last question, effectively. And it's a little bit of a potentially a hypothetical one, but I was very keen to ask it. Do you think in your lifetime, in the next 10 years, 20 years, do you think we could see pure toleration of LGBTQ players in football?
I think it's an interesting kind of hypothetical. What I will say is, that I don't know anybody who's ever come out and regretted it, and I think that is an overwhelmingly positive message we should send. Does homophobia exist? Absolutely. Does biphobia exist? Absolutely. Does transphobia exist? Absolutely. If someone was to come out tomorrow, will they experience potentially homophobia? Probably. But will their experiences be overwhelmingly positive, and will they be supported not just by the game, but by their loved ones and their clubs and their networks around them? Absolutely. I think the game's in a completely different place today as it has been historically, and I'm really, really hopeful in that. And I think we've seen some really positive examples of people that have come out in the twilight of the career and people that have come out in and around football who do have really positive experiences to kind of speak about and share. And I think that's the real important thing because we should focus on. But will they get some experiences of homophobia? The world is a shit place, sorry, but it will happen. But that will happen for anything, for anybody with any sort of protected characteristic, whether it's around race or even female participation with sexism. Sadly, that's just the climate that we live in. But will their experiences be overwhelmingly positive? I'm incredibly confident about that.
Well, thank you very much, Jay. I mean, this has been really, really insightful. I mean, you've spoken about how football has changed for the better, but more work does need to be done. And I thought that last thing you said there was really, really inspiring. So thank you very much for coming on. And I certainly have learned a lot about the issue. It's an issue I find very, very interesting and something I want to kind of something I want to bring attention to. So Jay, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the Outside the Box podcast. Do you have any final things to say?
No, just it's been absolute pleasure chatting to you, Al. And yeah, I really appreciate you reaching out. And again, yeah, please feel free for anybody who's interested in sort of LGBT in football. Obviously, get in touch with Stonewall FC on our website or our Twitter or Instagram page.
Yeah, and we will post links to the Stonewall website where there'll be lots of information, and we'll post plenty of links website where there'll be lots of information, and we'll post plenty of links on the Outside the Box Twitter, on the Outside the Box Instagram, to those links that Jay suggested. Thank you very much, Jay.